I want to look at this from a different perspective. We as Americans, and what is our place in looking at this situation, and what can we learn about it? And there's more than one kind of propaganda. In other words, you know, yes, the New York Times, the Washington Post say over and over, Assad must go. Hillary Clinton keeps saying it. They say that every massacre, all the violence is solely the provenance of the Syrian army. And they have sort of a line that they give us about what's happening there. There's some horrible monster who's essentially, you know, chewing up the people really just to keep power. And at the same time, Hillary Clinton comes across very shrill. And I like to look at it as Count Dracula versus the Wicked Witch of the West. And essentially, there's no really friendly character there. So, but I'd like to, instead of looking at that picture, which has no particular dimension or boundaries, look at some of the things that are overlooked by the media, for starters. And one is, for instance, what's a Free Syrian Army doing? Well, if you read the Angry Arab News Service, Saad Abu Khalil is very knowledgeable, and he has a lot of people he talks to in Lebanon and Syria. If you read Syria Comment, it's pretty clear that the Free Syrian Army is doing their own damage in the communities in Syria. They, too, are committing massacres against the people that offend them. They are not well organized. There are some groups that are really violent and other groups that really are just protecting their communities. And they are not, so this is not somebody that can form a unified government. It's sort of the, you know, call of the wild there. Another piece is that the Russians, like, what's going on with the Russians? And the Russians do have a long time relationship with the Assad government. However, the Russians, in my mind anyway, everything they've called for is not necessarily problematic. They have met with the opposition repeatedly. They have a lot of people on the ground in Syria who actually speak Arabic, and therefore they know what's going on. They have at least as legitimate interest there as the United States. So to just write them off as, you know, the commies and the bad guys and, you know, talk about Lenin and Stalin is not an appropriate way to look at their interest in this region. And it's not clear that they have no interest in the welfare of the people, but personally I think it's pretty clear that the United States does not have any interest in the welfare of the people. And Turkey, here's an interesting, it is true that Turkey would like to have some control in Syria. The Muslim Brotherhood gives it. But I actually read this a couple days ago, and I thought it was interesting. This is Pepe Escobar teaching, and Pepe follows all the gas lines and oil lines. Everybody, you know, they want to put a pipeline here, a pipeline there, and they're competing pipelines east and west. And he said, I'm referring to the deal that Tehran, Damascus, and Baghdad sealed last year. A $10 billion deal to build a gas pipeline from Iran across Iraq into Syria and then to the Mediterranean coast. And who would lose in all this? Turkey. Right now, Turkey is overlooking the PKK so that they can make oil deals with the Kurds in Iraq. So it says, then Iraq and Iran and Syria would have a direct outlet to sell gas and oil via the eastern Mediterranean to Western Europe, who desperately needs it, I might add, bypassing Turkey. What is the absolute of this might be the absolute obsession of Turkey currently. They want to become the energy transit corridor to Europe. So this gives an idea of another angle of why Turkey might be so playing such a large role in this, because they're doing all of the training and a lot of the transmit of goods back and forth to the fighters in Syria. And my stance is that I do want to see the Syrian people, just to put it out there, have more freedom and a more democratic society. However, I don't think that loading the country up with guns and getting people shooting at each other is really the way to make that happen. Well, what about the Western kingmakers? Well, Elaine just was talking about Manaf Tlath, and Asad Abu Khalil on the Angry Arab website had a picture of him when he was in Paris meeting with Rifat Assad. Rifat is Bashar's uncle. They kicked him out because he was making so much trouble when Hafez basically left the country to his son instead of to him. And Rifat Assad is the one who actually made the last massacre in Hama in the 80s against the Muslim Brotherhood happen. And so if they have Manaf Tlath in Paris meeting with Rifat Assad while he's there, it kind of shows a little about their angle on how to stabilize the country. And the other thing is that when Rifat left Syria, he suddenly became the biggest proponent of democracy and freedom anywhere and the Middle East. So this is another angle that, again, you never see it in the press. Nobody knows about it. And in fact, they took the picture down, and Assad found it cached somewhere. Another thing that's happening is that splintering the left is that trusted media outlets are now covering the conflict in Syria from the State Department point of view. So if you watch Democracy Now!, they had someone embedded with the Libyan opposition that when it was, you know, calling for intervention in their humanitarian corridor. They regularly have people on talking about the murderous Assad regime, but they never have anyone on talking about experience with the Free Syrian Army murdering the locals. And it's not that, you know, I mean, fair is fair, right? You should show both sides, because it's happening on both sides. And Al Jazeera, which became our trusted voice of the Middle East, not surprisingly shifted its stance, whereas in Iraq, they were totally against the United States agenda. Now they are, you know, and the U.S. is actually bombing their offices and killing people. And now, so we've got really a lot of trust in them. And now the Emir of Qatar essentially has completely changed sides. And my sense is that he did other good things before this, too. He's the one who brokered the solution that allowed Hezbollah to join the government in Lebanon, despite the fact that the U.S. and the Saudis were very strongly opposed to that happening. So I think that his change of heart was real and that his earlier sentiments were real. However, what's at stake right here is power, money, and maybe, who knows, maybe his ability to keep his position as emir of the country, because the U.S. is all about regime change when they don't like you. So he has shifted, and people who came to trust Al Jazeera are now hearing the state line coming through them. Russia Today has some interesting coverage. Might be a little unbalanced in the opposite to the U.S. coverage, but it is out there, and they do cover both sides. But, of course, that's the commies. You know, Putin's people, losers. We beat them already. You know, and I mean, I say that. Americans really, I think in their hard hearts, do kind of feel that way, because that's the way the Russians have been presented to us in the press. And so it makes it hard to make them a legitimate voice. And on to another thing that I noticed that happened, and this really is kind of an interesting thing, is Al-Akhbar. Now, Al-Akhbar is a newspaper in Lebanon. They've been covering Syria very closely. I started reading it. They've only had an English language paper like for a year or less. And I started reading it because Asad Abu Khalil, the Angry Arab, does it, and I am a big fan of his. He writes for that paper, or he writes a column. They have people that aren't well known in America. They have a couple of women journalists who are of Arabic background but don't live in Syria right now, and who have a strong, I would say, Lebanese Shia kind of bias, if they have any bias. That would be their bias. And Max Blumenthal was writing for them about Palestine. And Max suddenly quit. So, and of course, because, again, this is like a totally trusted mouthpiece of the wronged Arabs in the Middle East, and he quit Al-Akbar, and they said they're nothing but Assad apologists. And actually, Assad wrote, Abu Khalil, not the president of Syria, wrote a fairly lengthy thing, which I won't say too much about, except that Max said, well, that Al-Akbar disappointed him, and Assad said, well, you don't seem to have a problem writing for the Huffington Post. You know, I mean, how could you get worse than that? But if you look at this situation, and Kifa Nabki, another Lebanese blogger, or blog, said, it's a cliche to say it, but Al-Akbar's newsroom is probably as faithful a microcosm of Beirut's leftist community as any. And so this conversation is worth paying close attention to. Now, what am I to derive from that as American? Well, this Max's quitting just delegitimized an English language paper that is a legitimate voice of the people in that region. And that's a form of propaganda to do that. And when you look at it closely, they interviewed Max. And he did a long interview of why he did this, and he had all his complaints about Al-Akbar. But finally, in the end, he said, specifically, oh, they said, well, why didn't you just write a response? I mean, you're allowed to do that in Al-Akbar. You could have responded to these people you disagree with as strongly as you want, and Al-Akbar would have printed it. And he said, specifically because my beat was Israel-Palestine in foreign policy debates in Washington, I couldn't continue to provide cover for the other writers as long as they were there. Now, when I read this, I have to wonder, like, you know, this is a guy who talks to the Brookings Institute. And suddenly, he's too good for Al-Akbar. You know, and it makes you wonder, because he actually sort of mentions his contacts in Washington as the reason why he quit. So it seems to me that there may have been a little element of blackmail in his change of heart about Al-Akbar. And so I went back. I did two pieces of research. This is one for this. And I do periodically read Al-Akbar, but I don't read it, like, daily. But I went back and I looked through the articles to see if what he said was true. And since Assad writes for it, I was thinking it seemed unlikely it would be. And so in the month before he quit, these are some of the articles that were printed. Homs opposition, Al-Farouk battalion is killing us. This is about the splits in the Syrian, the Free Syrian Army, and how this one battalion, the Farouk battalion, is going around killing people all over the place and ruining a reputation of the other Free Syrian Army groups in his city. Who's afraid of the UN observer mission? Now, is this an Assad favorable thing? Well, maybe, but what they're talking about is America. UN, no Assad amnesty, even if it stops killing. That doesn't sound like an Assad apology. Going rogue, America's unconventional warfare in the Mideast. This is a page out of America. What she does is she takes the counterinsurgency manual and she lines it up against what's happening in Syria, and point by point, matches up the fallout of events. There were a couple of articles at that time that were supportive of Assad, a history of the Assad regime, strategies for confrontation, whatever. I read them and I thought that basically this person was evaluating, you know, maybe from the least negative, but not from an overwhelmingly positive thing. They were just saying this is a pragmatic regime dealing with whatever's around them. So, but what I see that really might bother somebody isn't apologies for Assad. It is direct attacks on U.S. foreign policy and United Nations behavior in Syria. And it seems to me that those are the real reasons. So what is Al-Akbar printing now about Syria? Activists in Syria muffled by violence. Syrian opposition figure to form exiled government. That's plus. Syrian rebel leader denounces new opposition. in that article, basically, somebody from the Free Syrian Army says, if you think we're going to take orders from those guys, you are out of your mind. Syrian rebels seek power in transition. Another thing of quoting, essentially interviewing members of the Free Syrian Army and saying, hey, if we win this battle, we're not going to turn our country over to the West. So I'm wondering, again, that this is just another form of propaganda in the sense that this is a legitimate voice. They are having a conversation. They have several articles also on what's called the Third Way there, which you can also find in Bassam Haddad's website, Jadalia, which talks about how you have to support the legitimate desire for change of the Syrian people while not supporting Assad and not supporting the violence. So that's another aspect of things just to think about, and I strongly encourage people to go out and read things like the Angry Arab website. This guy, he's got a sharp eye, and I don't always agree with him, and he's got some emotional baggage, but if you want to know what's really going on in the Arabic world, in the newspaper, read, Assad will tell you. So there's one more thing I wanted to talk a little about. Distortions due to attitude rather than information. In other words, like Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice, which I find it offensive that they use women to say things that men could never say and stay in a high position. But they say really, you know, horrific things about their opponents. Like, you know, they don't sound very civilized to me. And I think maybe the bottom being Hillary Clinton's remark about Gaddafi, we came, we saw, he died, is pretty bizarre for a member of government. But people get the idea like that's an okay way to talk and think and act. And Hillary Clinton recently published an article called Smart Power in a journal of called The New Statesman. It's a British journal. She went on about how we're just about wrapping up the Middle East and moving on to Asia, but we think we got a good plan, and we're moving right along, and we're going to take control of everything and not to worry. And at the end she said, still, amidst all this change, two constants remain. First, as the world becomes ever more interconnected and interdependent, a just, open, and sustainable international order is required to promote global peace and prosperity. And second, that order depends on American economic, military, and diplomatic leadership, which has underwritten global peace and prosperity for decades. So what she's saying is we have to lead, otherwise the world will fall apart. And interestingly, the new director of Amnesty International, her name is Suzanne Nozel, used to work for Hillary Clinton, and in fact, she coined the term smart power. And now Amnesty International has some big campaigns going. One is trying to keep NATO in Afghanistan to help out the women, which the women were like, spare us. There's a pretty number of women's organizations in Afghanistan that were outraged. And you can learn about that from Code Pink. And also, they had a campaign of condemn Russia for their silence on the violence in Syria. Well, Russia hasn't been silent. They've argued, begged, whatever. They've said, please stop arming the insurgency because everybody's fighting with everybody. Now, to me, that is, not silence. That's just not what we want to hear. So, I guess I have one more point. Oh, 3 minutes. Can I rush to it? Oh, going back to the earliest days. This is from Syria Compound. I spent hours the other night going back to the beginning of this thing. Okay. The U.S. initially supported the Assad, supposedly, but Ambassador Ford was over there meeting at the time with the rebels on a regular basis from the very beginning of the protest. Nonviolent protesters in Daraa set fires to the headquarters of the Ba'ath Party. It appears that the governor had mishandled the situation. Some people were killed, and the government in Damascus sent an apology and some people to come to the funeral. And people started, people actually in the among the protesters stormed the government building, resulting in a problem where one person died, but they're using rubber bullets and tear gas canisters, kind of like the American police and the Israeli military uses in which we don't have any problem with if the Israelis do it, or the Anaheim police. At the very beginning, too, Josh was saying people want change but not revolution, and Josh has given up and said, well, let's just get it over with, but anything to stop the violence. But the face of the revolution is this actor, this son of a famous actor who lives, is American citizen at that point and lives in West Virginia. Then there's the gay girl in Damascus who turns out to be a man living in the UK somewhere. A couple months later, after she goes and tells all these stories about her horrible experiences with the government knocking down her door and stuff. In fact, it was a lie. Very popular one, too. Amr Abdelhamid is the actor. Then there was a new face. It was a page, it was a Facebook page, a guy who lives in Sweden. I guess Josh printed some information. He thought one thing said that there were demonstrations, reached centers of non-Sunni communities such as Sueda and Salamia. He had YouTube videos. And someone else replied to that comment and said, "Dear Joshua, I am from Sueda and I was in contact with my family there all day yesterday. There were no demonstrations there. There was no violence there. Nothing at all happened in Sueda. And I hope that you'll print this to counter what the guy before me said. And by the way, I could tell by the way the people were dressed in the video that they weren't in Sueda." Now, this isn't to say that whatever the Assad regime has done that's not okay is suddenly okay, or that they didn't do it. What it does say is that there's something else going on than what we understand. There was another thing where there was a massacre in Jisal Shugur. That was actually the first time that it occurred to me that there really was a violent opposition in Syria, not just people going crazy, setting cars on fire because they were mad. Because these guys basically set their wives across the border at a Turkish camp, set up an ambush, and called in the Syrian army and killed 40 people. And that was in May of 2011. So that's basically, it's a harsh place to end, but I think the thing that I really want to say is that we really need to see the whole story. We're certainly not any help to the Syrian people, and you've heard a lot of negative things today that are unbalanced, but I figure they're a balance for what you've been reading in the New York Times and the Washington Post for the last 2 years. And that is why the intervention has to end.